Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. In a few short months, many families will pack into their cars and head off on an American tradition, the road trip, which may well include a stop at one of the country's national parks. In 2015, more than 307 million people visited sites maintained by the U.S. National Park Service. The NPS cares for over 400 areas, totaling more than 84 million acres, and including national monuments and military sites. But the jewels in the crown are 58 national parks. From the oldest, Yellowstone, founded in 1872, to Pinnacles, a territory upgraded to national park status in 2013. In recent years, it has become clear that these wondrous natural resources are being degraded by their very popularity. Ford Cochran is with us with advice on planning a fun and conscientious park adventure. He's author, geologist, director of programming for National Geographic's expeditions, and a national parks aficionado. Ford, welcome to the program.
Delighted to be with you today.
Are all parks created equal, or do you have different tips for different parks?
Well, I'd say, you know, every park is unique, but all of them are extraordinary. So I think you can have a fantastic time in any of our country's national parks.
Any particular ones that we should take special care of? They're getting over-visited?
Well, I'd say, I mean, you know, the thing is, the Park Service is working very hard to make sure that people do have access to the parks, and they really want people to come and to enjoy them. And so I'd say, you know, take care of your park the way you would take care of your home, which is, you know, leave it as good as or better than you found it. But definitely do come and enjoy it. I'd say people shouldn't be shy about sort of embracing these places. I tell you, I've worked for National Geographic for almost 25 years and had the privilege of traveling all over the world. There's no place I love more than our national parks.
So which times of year are best to go? I imagine summer is peak. So should you avoid the parks then?
Well, it depends. I'd say they're great in every season. I mean, I think of a park such as Yellowstone, and this is the world's first national park created in 1872. People have called it the National Parks America's best idea. We came up with it right here in our country. But there's a park for all seasons. I mean, it's fabulous in the summer. It's very popular. But even in the summer, it's so huge, and the surrounding so-called Greater Yellowstone ecosystem, all the public lands surrounding Yellowstone, so enormous. You can find all sorts of places to go off, and if you want, get lost in the wilderness that is Yellowstone, even as some of the most popular destinations there have a lot of visitors. But if you go in other seasons, you'll find an almost completely different experience. I had the great good fortune to go over the winter holidays this year with my family to Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks. And of course, seeing Yellowstone muffled and buried in snow, not quite unoccupied, but virtually with far fewer visitors, you know, than you see in the summer. So accessing it by snow coach and then cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, the wildlife stands out in stark contrast to that white blanket of snow over the park. The steaming hot springs and mud pots and geysers are just spectacular anytime. But in the winter, the whole place is just transformed. It's a sparkling gem. Most people never see it at that time of year. So I'd say think of the places you love and have been to before. Think of visiting them in another season. But if you've got kids and you can only get away in the summer, then by all means, still go then.
It does sound like bliss. But summer, as you mentioned, that's when the kids are out of school. Do you need reservations, or most of the parks already booked?
Certainly you don't need reservations to sort of day trip into the parks. You can come into the parks and visit them. Many of the accommodations will be booked up in some of the most popular places, like the Old Faithful Inn in Yellowstone National Park. My favorite lodge anywhere. It's like an enormous treehouse, 7 stories tall. Just a wonderful place to be. It tends to fill up very rapidly after reservations open, but even if you don't plan ahead, if you check and check and check over several days, there's a good chance there'll be a cancellation. I'm taking my family this summer to Glacier National Park in the parks of the Canadian Rockies. We made our plans just about a month ago when I thought it would be far too late to just go online and book the Many Glacier Lodge and some of the other wonderful lodges there. But over several days, rooms opened up and I was able to get every place we wanted to stay.
I have noticed that some of those rooms are very pricey. Do you recommend camping instead?
Well, if you can, I mean, camping is an absolutely fantastic experience. I mean, we go to the parks to find a sanctuary from the busy urban world that most of us live in, and so it's wonderful to camp if you can to literally get back to nature. So if you can do it, if you're intrepid, whether it's just overnight or for longer, I'd say do make the effort. It'll be well rewarded. It's a hassle, but a good one. I've once read, in fact, that the strongest families make camping a regular activity. I think there's lots of small sort of adversities that need to be overcome, little challenges that need to be overcome. It really pulls people together. And then the beauty that you're rewarded with when you're just immersed in nature, looking at the stars at night, listening to the sounds of the creatures living. Of course, this world is so alive. You can't forget that when you're camping out in a national park.
Are there park policies generally on campfires?
Now there's a question. I don't know if there's a uniform policy. I believe you certainly can have campfires in some of the parks, and many of the parks, the practice will really depend on what conditions are like. One of the great traditions in the parks is what's called the campfire talk that rangers have given from the very beginning. Stephen Mather, the first director of the Park Service, wanted the Ranger Corps to be people that folks would really look up to, you know, knowledgeable. They've mastered the parks that they're in. So it's great to talk to a ranger, learn more about the park, learn better things to do. But also, if you can make time for those evening talks, they're not all held around campfires these days. Some of them are in auditoriums, but they're still wonderful. Many of them are in amphitheaters outside.
Americans love their national parks, maybe even too much. With so many visitors, especially during the school vacation time, we have some advice on getting the most and being the most conscientious about your national park adventure with Ford Cochran. He's director of programming for National Geographic Expeditions and clearly loves the national parks. I have to say, I have not met a park ranger I did not like. Pretty extraordinary people. Are they the best resource for getting information on the parks during visit, or maybe websites?
There's the preparation you do beforehand, and then there's what you do in the park. And of course, whenever I'm preparing to go to a park, we have a couple of guidebooks that Geographic makes. They're wonderful resources. The Park Service websites are fantastic, and there are other, you know, gateway communities often have sites about things to do in and around the parks, so they're all helpful. If you're going to use those in the parks, you know, particularly if they're digital, if they're things you're going to want to access from, say, your smartphone or your laptop, you may want to download them before you go, because often you can't get a signal when you're in the national park. They tend not to have too many transmitter towers for cellular service right there in the parks. But the rangers are just always a fantastic resource. And so whenever I get to a park, one of the first things I love to do is make a beeline for a visitor center, find a ranger who's there, and spend a few minutes talking to him or her. Even if I only have a couple hours, they're going to know the best possible ways to spend it.
Yeah, is that something you suggest, kind of having, I guess, a game plan or a mission in mind for a visit?
I like to. You know, different people like to approach their vacation time, you know, in different ways. For me, I love sort of rolling up my sleeves and seeing what's there, seeing what I can do, looking at photographs. You know, what could I see? What could I go and do? I love to take pictures myself. I just usually use my smartphone to do it. But I always want to get to the most, you know, some of the most scenic destinations, the most appealing destinations in the parks. And so I check to see where other people have gone. Some people love to wing it, and I think you can do that too. And for some, you know, they prefer maybe not to spend too much time planning. They want to be surprised. They want to go and explore and discover on their own. And that works just fine. I mean, again, that the parks are so full of riches, spectacular landscapes, incredible wildlife, great history, that I think whatever approach you take, you really can't go wrong.
Well, we are celebrating the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service this year, but also hearing a lot of reports about cuts in funding, maybe information at park or staffing is being cut. Are they well-staffed in general?
Well, I think it's a question. You know, it depend on the park and what you want to see. I think funding our Park Service staff and caring for the parks is, I think, something that should be a great priority for our nation. They're a treasure, you know, kind of an unexcelled treasure, a global treasure, not just for us in the United States, but for people from around the world. We are so privileged and fortunate to have them. And the investment of taking care of them right is such a good one. I think of the ways in which, you know, when we've invested in the parks, what it does is by setting aside the land to make a national park, by staffing it so that it's protected, you create this virtuous cycle where the community surrounding the park benefits because visitors come, they spend time in restaurants, they spend time, you know, they buy gas, they're in shops, they're in hotels. All around the parks, it really generates great revenue for the communities in it, and that helps to support them. So it's good for the communities, it's sort of good for business, it's good for nature, and it's good for us. Many people think of the parks as sanctuaries for wildlife, which they are. The bison, for the iconic species of the National Park Service and maybe of our nation, the wild bison, there were fewer than 24 of them left in the herd at Yellowstone when finally they were properly protected in that national park, and they've come back in a big way. We nearly lost them. So, of course, they're important sanctuaries for wildlife, but the parks are really sanctuaries for us. People need to recognize that in this world of of busy lives and fast-moving careers, that having a place that we can get to, where we're surrounded by nature, where we can reconnect with it, is one of the most important things. You have the privilege, and your listeners, of being in New Hampshire, where you have many wonderful places to go. I think of the Presidential Range, the White Mountains, the Kank, these beautiful, beautiful destinations there many of us don't have places like that so near to our homes. But if we can get to a national park, we can really connect again to the things that matter.
But they do get a steady flow of traffic. Do you think people generally treat the parks well, or can you give us tips, actually, for helping keep them in tip-top shape?
In general, I've been pretty pleased with what I've seen. Most people are quite respectful of the beauty of parks. I haven't seen, I'm sure there are places where it happens, but I haven't seen a lot of people, say, littering in the national parks. And I think people are getting the message about not carrying away the splendors of the parks. You go to a place like Petrified Forest, of course, there's always a concern that little by little, one pocketful at a time, the petrified trees, the petrified wood that is such a major draw in that park will go away. And there are times in Park Service history where it's happened. I think of Mammoth Cave National Park and some of the caves that are protected in that vast cave system, the longest cave system in the world, more than double the length of the second longest cave. And, you know, and people carried away decorations. The lava tube caves, the Thurston Lava Tube in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. There were all these wonderful features that dripping lava had left in the cave and more than a century ago, that when visitors first came, they carted those away and they sold them. There was even a national park that was dedicated to fossils that was decommissioned because people carried all the fossils away. So we've actually lost a park. Just calling something a national park doesn't mean it's protected. You want to, observe that ethos of taking nothing but pictures, leaving nothing but footprints, leaving it better than you found it. One other thing I'd urge people to do is if they find a park they love, a place they love, is to really adopt it. Whether it's by becoming members of the foundations and conservation associations that support critical work that happens in the parks, almost every park has one, or going back, you know, spending time, you know, maybe it's uprooting invasive species, maybe it's helping improve trails, or simply bringing your kids if you've got a family, and sharing the park with them. The parks are only as protected as every generation chooses to make them. And so when we make it a priority for our kids and show them how rewarding and wonderful these places are, we're not just making happier kids, we are making good citizens.
Well, Ford, you've made me excited. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
It's my great pleasure, and best to everyone, all of your listeners, and thank you so much for having me on.
Ford Cochran, he's an author, a geologist, and director of programming for National Geographic Expeditions. You can look at the 9 specific tips for getting the most out of your national parks vacation from Nat Geo. The link is at wordofmouthradio.org.